Welcome to Wealthion. I'm Wealthion founder Adam Taggart, here with another short explainer video. 6 years ago, I wrote an article titled Grasshopper Nation, warning about how poorly prepared Americans are for retirement. And sadly, the data has only gotten worse since then. I'll deliver the punchline here first and then get to the underlying data. Right now, as the largest generational cohort in history has reached retirement age, tens of millions of baby boomers in America have insufficient savings to retire on or otherwise fund their living costs during their twilight years. This is a massive economic and humanitarian crisis in the making, with no credible plans from the government currently on the table to address it. In fact, we're not even having a national discussion about it right now because we're not yet even acknowledging that we have a problem. Until we shake free from this denial, we'll continue to fall deeper into this hole of generational insolvency, while the timeline of consequences accelerates towards us at a faster rate. Okay, now that I've got your attention, let's look at the data. Right off the bat, we notice that most Americans aren't saving for retirement at all. The U.S. Census Bureau's survey of income and program participation shows that the majority of adults in America have nothing saved for retirement. And when we look at the cohort closest to retirement age, those 55 to 66 years old, the ones who should have the most money saved up by this point, 49%, pretty much half of them, have no personal retirement savings. I'm talking $0. Let that sink in. Half of those approaching retirement age currently have no savings to draw on. Folks, that is not good. Well, what about the other 51%? How much do they have socked away? Not nearly enough. The latest Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Finances found the median amount of retirement savings of those Americans who are saving any money is only $63,000. And again, if we look at that 55 to 64 age cohort, the one closest to retirement age, we see a median savings of just $134,000, which may sound like a lot, but it really isn't. If you assume a $40,000 annual withdrawal rate, that will fund just a little more than 3 years of living expenses. That's not nearly enough to fund the 15 to 30 more years many of these folks are likely to live. So to recap quickly, there are currently over 50 million Americans age 65 and over, and that number will continue to swell by 10,000 people per day up until 2030, when the last baby boomer turns 65. Half of these people have no retirement savings to speak of. And of the remaining half, most have far too little financial reserves to fund the needs of the 1 to 3 decades that lie ahead. Now, for those thinking, well, Social Security and Medicare should take care of those folks, let me share the latest stats on those with you. Despite receiving a 5.9% cost of living adjustment this year, given how high inflation's running, the average monthly benefit paid out in Social Security for retirement workers is currently just $1,666.49. For spouses, the average monthly spousal benefit is currently $837. These are not livable stipends in much of America, where the average asking rent payment right now dwarfs it at $1,900 a month. And to make matters worse, the future dependability of these Social Security payments are in jeopardy. The Social Security trustees just released their annual report on the state of the trust fund, revealing that at the current trajectory, Social Security will be insolvent by 2035. That's just 13 years from now. And Medicare is in even more dire shape. Its trust fund will be insolvent by 2028. That's only 6 years away. Now, insolvency doesn't necessarily mean that the checks will suddenly disappear, but it does mean they'll need to be substantially reduced. And unless additional new funding is secured, they will continue to dwindle away. So the key takeaway here is that the government doesn't have a ready plan to meaningfully support the growing pool of tens of millions of seniors who don't have savings. In fact, the solutions it currently does offer are buckling under a similar lack of funds as well. Now, how the heck did we get here, you may be asking? Well, the answer is complicated, as most things are in life, but there are a few main culprits. The first was the phasing out of defined benefit pensions in the private sector. Back during the Revolutionary War, the Continental Congress promised a monthly lifetime income to soldiers who fought and survived the conflict. This guaranteed income stream, called a pension, was again offered to soldiers in the Civil War and then in every American war since. And since then, similar pension promises funded from public coffers expanded to cover retirees from other branches of government. States and cities followed suit, extending pensions to all sorts of municipal workers, ranging from policemen to politicians, from teachers to tax collectors. A pension's what's referred to as a defined benefit plan. The payout promised a worker upon retirement is guaranteed up front, according to a formula typically dependent on salary size and years of employment. Understandably, workers appreciated the security and dependability offered by pensions. So, as a means to attract skilled talent, the private sector started offering pensions too. The first corporate pension was offered by the American Express Company all the way back in 1875. And by the 1960s, half of all employees in the private sector were covered by a pension plan. But once pensions had become commonplace, they were much less effective as an incentive to lure top talent. They started to feel like burdensome cost centers to companies. As America's corporations grew and their veteran employees started hitting retirement age, the amount of funding required to meet current and future pension funding obligations became huge, and it kept growing. Remember, the baby boomer generation, the largest ever by far in U.S. history, was just entering the workforce by the 1960s. Companies were eager to get this expanding liability off of their backs, and the more poorly capitalized firms started defaulting on their pensions, stiffing those who had loyally worked for them. So it's little surprise that the 1970s and 1980s saw the introduction of personal retirement savings plans. The individual retirement arrangement, better known as an IRA, was formed by the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA, in 1974. And the first 401k plan was created in 1980. These saving vehicles are defined contribution plans. The future payout of the plan is variable, meaning it's unknown today and will largely be a function of how much of their income the worker directs into the fund over their career, as well as the market return on the fund's investments. Touted as a revolutionary improvement for the worker, these plans promised to give the individual power over his or her own financial destiny. No longer would it be dictated by their employer. Your company doesn't offer a pension? No worries. Open an IRA and create your own personal pension fund. Afraid your employer might mismanage your pension? A 401k removes that risk. You decide how your retirement money is invested. Want to retire sooner? Just increase the percent of your annual income contributions. All this sounded pretty good to workers, but it sounded great to their employers. Why? Because it transferred the burden of retirement funding away from the company and onto the employee. It allowed for the removal of a massive and fast-growing liability off of the corporate balance sheet and materially improved the outlook for future earnings and cash flow. As you'd expect given this, corporate America moved swiftly over the next several decades to cap pension participation and transition its employees to defined contribution plans. The table here shows how vigorously private pensions, the line in green here, have disappeared since the introduction of IRAs and 401k, shown here as the red line. All right, so to recap, 40 years ago, a grand experiment was embarked upon, one that promised U.S. workers, using these new defined contribution vehicles, you'll be better off when you reach retirement age. Well, the results of that 40-year experiment are now in. And it's been a pretty dismal failure, as the numbers I cited at the start of this video reveal. A big part of this failure is due to human nature. When given a choice to sacrifice today by saving for tomorrow, or to spend today on instant gratification, most folks choose the latter. But the other big culprit in the story is the massive wealth inequality that's been accelerating within America for decades. And much of the blame for this lies with the Federal Reserve, whose policies first nurtured and then turbocharged this unfairness. The details of this deserve their own explainer video, and perhaps I'll produce one on that topic soon. But at a high level, the trillions and trillions of dollars worth of stimulus that the Fed has issued over the past several decades, combined with the concurrent era of record low interest rates the Fed engineered, These twin propellants drove the prices of financial securities wildly higher. And this, of course, has benefited the folks who own these assets, which it turns out, in terms of volume, is a disproportionately small percentage of the population. Now, just how bad is the imbalance? Look at how the chart here shows that the top 10% of the population, marked here in blue, owns nearly all of the public and private equity, as well as investment real estate. This data comes from a report that's several years old, and things have only gotten worse since then, especially with all of the fresh trillions in stimulus issued since the pandemic. Take note of the middle bar chart here, showing how the top 10% own 84% of the stock market. Well, the latest data now shows that the top 10% has now increased its share to owning 89% of stocks. And the wealth of the top 1% has gone positively ballistic. Look at how much it's grown since the 2008 recession, and look at how the collective wealth of the bottom 50% has barely budged over that time. That's because the Fed's policies are pushing virtually all of the wealth creation into the pockets of the already rich, while at the same time pushing up the cost of living. The lower and middle classes have been getting increasingly squeezed as real wages decline while real costs rise. There's just been less and less left over for regular folks to invest toward retirement. The game has largely been rigged against the bottom 90%. And with consumer price inflation now raging at an official rate of 8.6% while the economy slows further into what now appears to be an inevitable recession, the goal line is moving farther and farther and farther away for many. All right, let me sum things up again here. The majority of Americans, including the baby boomers now entering their senior years, are on track to have insufficient funds to retire. Existing government entitlement programs are nowhere near sufficient to close the gap, and they are fast running out of funds themselves. What's most likely to result from all this is a bitter brew of personal austerity mixed with desperate government policy. On the austerity side, seniors will likely have to remain in the workforce for longer, perhaps a lot longer than they expected. Many will never be able to afford to retire at all. The leisure we associate with the golden years may just not be possible for them. They'll be forced to do with less. There will simply be less money, from a paycheck or from the government, to be spent on anything other than the basic necessities. They will have to lean harder on whatever support networks they have. Adult children, siblings, friends, anyone who can help subsidize their budget shortfall. And this will be emotionally tough for many who never wanted to feel like a burden on their loved ones. And on the government side, we'll likely see a panic frenzy to implement policies like delaying the starting age for entitlement payouts. Now, Social Security has already done this several times in its history. It seems inevitable that they'll push the qualifying age back again. Entitlement cuts. As the recent trustee reports show, unless new funding is secured, Social Security beneficiaries will see an automatic payment cut of 20% should the fund indeed become insolvent by 2035. Means testing. If you're well off enough, you may only receive a discounted percentage of the Social Security benefits paid to others worse off than you, or you might not receive any. This idea is already being considered by lawmakers and has broad bipartisan support amongst voters. Higher taxes. If Congress knows how to do one thing really, really well when faced with a budget shortfall, it's to pass new taxes. We could easily see across-the-board tax increases justified to, quote, save the seniors. And this may also be the perfect opportunity for those in favor of an annual wealth tax to finally ram that through. And last, more stimulus. If Congress can borrow or the Fed can print to kick the can a little further down the road, you can be sure they'll try their hardest to do this. Of course, the byproducts of this will predictably be even more price inflation, offsetting any real help that stimulus checks may appear to offer. Plus, this will just make our disastrous national debt situation even worse, even faster. Whew. All right, I understand this has been a lot of sobering stuff, folks. And I didn't even touch on the extreme vulnerability of the public pension system, or how a continued bear market and a recession could wipe out much of whatever equity the bottom 90% owns in their 401ks and their homes. Those are big threats too, but I didn't want this to become an hour-long video. So let me wrap up here with some practical steps to consider. To increase your odds of having a sufficient nest egg to retire on, do the following. Earn, save, plan. Prudently invest your savings with a professional financial advisor who has a good track record of getting clients successfully across the retirement finish line. Get the right insurance in place. Does long-term care insurance or annuities make sense for you? And yeah, I know a lot of people have an aversion to annuities, but in certain cases, they can make a lot of sense for folks that could depend having a dependable income stream in their retirement years. Do you have enough life insurance to adequately support your spouse in case you die early or vice versa? And if you're 65 or older, do you have the right Medigap insurance? It can be a tremendous cost saver. Plan today for your retirement lifestyle. How will you reduce your cost footprint? Where will your income come from? Calculate the monthly budget you'll need to retire by your target age. Are you on track to hit it? Now, for those not on track and with poor odds of catching up, all isn't lost, but you really need to get serious here. Start by calculating just how big your shortfall will likely be and in what areas, like housing, food, etc. Then you can start attacking how to fill those gaps. The good news is that there are a lot of federal, state, and local social programs you may qualify for. Food assistance is a good example. Subsidized senior housing is an even bigger one, where your monthly rent is calculated based on a percent of your income. In some cases, as low as 1/3 of your Social Security check. But with so many unprepared seniors, the demand is growing far faster than supply, so you need to get on the application lists for these programs early. It can sometimes take years before a spot opens up for you. But they can be real godsends, folks. I know this because I have a close family member, a senior, who I've spent years shepherding through this process. Speaking of family and those close to you, have an honest conversation with them to ask what support they may be able and willing to provide to you, financially, with living arrangements, with chores, rides, check-ins, as well as emotional support. And can you spread your needs amongst a number of people so that no one person is getting duly unburdened? As I mentioned, I've spent much of my past decade going through this with an aging family member, and the process is hard, even under good conditions. In my case, it was made even more challenging due to years of avoidance and resistance by my relative, who understandably was scared of the life changes this process would entail. But the delays and the drama ended up creating a lot of wasted effort and hurt feelings. So be sure to get as out in front of all this with your planning as possible. And also be sure to express appreciation for the efforts of those stepping in to support you. And on a related note, if you have aging family members who are unprepared to fund the remaining years, and the odds are good that you're going to be pulled into their financial crisis when it arrives, gently but firmly force the planning discussion now. If they refuse to have it, let them know what they can count on you for and what they can't. Both are a kindness, as you're accurately setting expectations for them. And keep in mind, being a good person means doing what you're able to do, but also drawing limits so that you're not jeopardizing your own future in a futile attempt to make up for someone else's lack of preparedness. Now, folks, I fully acknowledge this is not a fun topic, but denial or unrealistic hope is not a strategy. Take it from me, I've seen this play out firsthand. In dealing with a tsunami of financially broke seniors ahead, we're going to need a lot smarter planning, disciplined savings and cost management, and sacrifice than got us into this mess. And we're sure going to need a whole lot more compassion, too. Now, Wealthion's working on producing an online webinar focusing on the specific best practices for retirement planning. Timing for that should be within the next 1 to 2 months. If you're interested in being alerted when that comes out, just send an email to retirement@wealthion.com. Hopefully you found this video helpful, folks. If you like these kinds of short explainer videos, let me know in the comments section below, and we'll make more of them for you. Also, feel free to suggest any topics you'd particularly like to see covered in a future video. And also, help support this channel by hitting the like button and clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. Thanks for doing that, and thanks so much for watching, folks.